Welcome into the BBP2 in our second Inquirer Bengals podcast of the week. Every Thursday during the season, we'll bring you more specific game preview insight from players and your Cincinnati.com beat writers. But that's only the beginning. Every week, we'll bring you Paul Dougherty's hot seat with our guest on Beyond the Stripes, our advanced analytics conversation with the team at Pro Football Focus, as well as a Throwback Thursday interview with a voice from Bengals past. All right, let's go.
All right, welcome to the BBP2.
That's right.
Yeah.
The deuce. The BBP.
We're dropping one.
We are dropping the deuce on you right now. That's a great way to start our new enterprise. I think that's about in our level that we're at. For the first time this whole season, we're going to be bringing you a second podcast during the week where you get, you know, we heard from a lot of you that you love the BBP. You wanted the second one that was a little more forward looking, that was a little more about that week's game, because we do a lot of reactionary stuff right afterwards. So, boom, here you go. But I said, we can't just do that. We gotta give you something a little extra,
yeah.
A little extra sauce. And, you know, a lot, we love Beyond the Stripes. It's a great show. But not a lot of people will watch the whole thing, and Doc's hot seat sometimes goes on a little longer than your standard snackable
right.
2-minute video when everyone's attention span leaves. So we thought it'd be a great chance to bring the hot seat in here every week. So you'll hear Doc's hot seat from Beyond the Stripes every single week, talk with the guests. So this week you'll hear Doc's hot seat, which is really good,
yeah.
With Andy Dalton, was really interesting from our Beyond the Stripes at the Hofbräu House. Then every week we do a preset thing with Pro Football Focus, where we talk to one of their lead analysts over there, whether it's Chris Collinsworth or today their lead analyst Steve Pelizzola, talking about sort of the deeper analytical look at that this week's game or a trend that the Bengals are going through. So had that this week, a lot of talk about blitzing and some of the liabilities on the Bengals offense and defense according to their numbers and their stats. So we have that, and then every week a Throwback Thursday interview, thanks to our good friend and helpful producer extraordinaire Lindsey Patterson, who's helped us track down all these guys. And so today we're going to open it up and talk to Terrell Owens about his year in Cincinnati, which ended up being his last year. His career and life have gone in a number of different directions since then. So really interesting conversation there. So that's what these Thursday pods are going to be. It's going to be about that week's game and then all these other extras that we have for you. Want to make sure you have a chance to enjoy during the week. Hope you enjoy it. We're happy to bring it to you. All right, let's talk Jets, Bengals, Jets this week.
Not Sharks.
No Sharks involved. We are
just the Jets.
Just the Jets. I'm excited about it. This is my first trip for a game to New York, which I'm excited. Although I will never actually make it into actual New York City.
Yeah.
We'll be staying in Newark.
Me too. See, I don't count Buffalo as New York. That was one of my least favorite.
No, I'm talking New York City. I'm definitely not counting Buffalo.
Exactly.
Well, you just wanted a reason to talk about how you hate Buffalo again. Like, that was completely uncalled for.
Well, you know.
It's just, and there's really no reason that you should be so angry about Buffalo, but it's just who you are.
Yeah. It made me mad. hey, you know what? I'll just leave it there. Loyal BBP listeners.
They know.
They'll know what's up with
that. A lot
of
things make you mad. Buffalo is one of those things that make you mad. So we've got our first trip, and it's going to be, I think, emotional there. I mean, a lot of players, Marvin Lewis. You had a great sit-down with Vinny Ray, who's from Far Rockaway, who's from New York, who was there. He was 11, right?
14. Freshman
in high school there when 9/11 happened. And this is going to be playing on 9/11 on the 15th anniversary. I mean, it's going to be a charged atmosphere.
Yeah. Yeah, I it's funny, Paul, because I was in college, and I get goosebumps even just thinking about it or remembering it. And, Vinny was a freshman. His dad was a subway engineer, was actually underneath One World Trade Center when the first plane hit. He had no idea, obviously, what was happening above him. Vinny could see the smoke from the top. I mean, it was kind of one of those weird, eerie, you know, Vinny looks back at it now and it's like, wow, like, you know, my dad was down there and got away safely. They were all safe. But, yeah, check it out, Cincinnati.com. And it will be. Jets have a lot of pregame stuff planned. Kevin Coyle, secondary coach, his brother, was a first responder. So yeah, it's it'll be something. I mean, football is, and it's interesting, Paul, because the guys are aware. Marvin Lewis is making them aware. Curious to see how that, what the first series is like.
Yeah,
just because, you know, then once you start playing, then you're playing, right? But there's a lot of run up.
There's a lot of run up
on Saturday and then Sunday especially.
And Marvin has said he was really open about the fact that they've for a long time been making a point about how emotional this is going to be, which you don't hear that a lot from him. I thought it was interesting him addressing outside stuff.
Right.
Usually he says just show up, play football, don't worry about anything else. But he's obviously went out of his way to address it with his team. He doesn't want to see guys getting caught up too much in that stuff. You know, in taking the moment. But know how to flip the switch to football.
Right. Yeah, well, you're right, Paul, because he's to your point, he's embrace. In my opinion, I don't know if embrace is the right word, but it's the only one I can think of right now. Of like, because he said, look, we've had the schedule for many, many months. So, you're right. It wasn't let's address it in, you know, whatever, July, and then forget, and then whatever. I mean, it's very, very real for him and Vinny was a freshman, but he's one of the older guys.
Yeah, most of these guys were really young.
They're grade school. This is like literal history for them.
Well, absolutely.
So I find it
that's
is.
Why I wonder how much it really will affect some of it when you talk about guys that were, you know, seven.
Right.
I mean, how much. Now, someone like Vinny who was there and has a tie, and everyone sort of has a tie, but, you know, when you're. You know, me and you, we're sitting here. We were in college. Yeah. We're 35 now. I mean, you know, it's different where it was very so real for us, and everybody knew somebody that was there. Some of these guys, I think they're a bit removed from it. But regardless, it'll be a charged atmosphere to be in New York, to be selected to play in that game. I think Marvin Lewis kind of called it an honor, and I think there is something to that. I think they wanted it to be a big game.
Yeah,
and it is so. As far as what's going to happen, I mean, you talked about early in the game and seeing how those first series go. I think those will be huge determining series for this Bengals offense with so many new pieces. I mean, how they can – last year, they just trounced Oakland right out the gate, right? I mean,
Tyler Eifert.
Tyler Eifert.
Welcome to the league.
Yeah, just breakout game. Right. Breakout game of a Pro Bowl season. And Oakland didn't know what hit them. They went. Yeah. That was the string of it was like five of the first six road games they played where the team got booed going into halftime.
Right,
because the Bengals were just trouncing people early in games because they were clicking and they had a lot of continuity. Well, they don't have that on offense this year, and I'm curious to see how the offense fares, particularly in that first half when they're trying to figure out how it all works, and maybe even through the whole game, but particularly in that first half.
Yeah, two things there. One, Paul, let's say that. The Jets win the toss, I think Todd Bowles would run his defense out there first just to set a tone.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
That's the strongest group.
And defense, you're sort of allowed to play off of the emotion of everything that's happening, right? So let's just say – but regardless, whatever. I mean, Bengals win, I think they'd run their defense out there first. But, yeah, no Tyler Eifert for the Bengals this week. I do think that the – offensively, you're right. You know, it's interesting, Paul. A.J. Green this week, you know, everyone's going to be looking at that matchup with Darrell Revis. A.J. said, he's like, this starts with me. I need to make plays every day or every week continuously. It's funny to hear him say that because you're like, well, A.J. Green always makes plays.
Yeah.
And he says, no, it starts with me this week. So it's like, well, what does that mean? Does that mean it's old Andy AJ thing of like throwing it over there and trying to beat Darrell Revis? Is it, you know, does he feel he's got to set a tone, or Andy feels he's got to get AJ involved early, and that would run counter maybe to what should make them successful this week, which might be run the ball, go heavy behind Ryan Hewitt and Jeremy Hill and Gio Bernard. I don't know. It is. I'm real curious to see what happens, and especially because AJ's not a guy to really usually step out like that.
I would not be shocked to see them in the first series set up a deep ball to AJ. Whatever they have seen on tape, set something up where they think they can go over the top. Test Darrell Revis' speed. He's getting up there.
Yeah.
You know, AJ is certainly a deep ball guy. I would run early in the game, I'd run some sort of play action and a deep shot to 18 and maybe put Revis on his heels a little bit. You know,
if there's something, if there was something that was going to quiet that crowd down in an instant, would be a long pass completion over 24.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And talk about setting a tone. So we didn't see a ton of that in the preseason. We saw a lot of 16 to 20 play drives of dinking and dunking the way. Yeah, a lot of pounding the rock down the field. So we'll see. We'll see how that plays out offensively. The other thing on offense that I want to bring up is the Jets blitz more than almost anybody in football. You know, you'll hear later on the PFF talking about you'll hear Steve talking about the blitz. They blitz 43% of the time last year. The NFL average is 28. I mean, they bring it all the time. Last year, Andy Dalton took a huge step in beating the blitz. It went from almost a weakness, where his passer rating against the blitz was in the 80s, to a huge strength. It was about 114.
Yeah,
I mean, he was just killing people in recognizing the blitz, pointing it out, and taking advantage of wherever the weakness was, knowing how to get it out. And he is. He's great at getting the ball out fast and diagnosing a defense, so it does seem to play into his strength, at least it did last year. But so much of that is trust with receivers.
Yeah.
And that's all. So much of that is new.
Right.
So I wonder if he'll go to do what he did last year and have problems,
right,
and not be able to get rid of it in a hurry, and what that will cause. Will that cause turnovers? Will that cause sacks? What will come of that? It's going to be interesting.
No, yeah, twofold, because it's obviously the Jets do that because they believe in Revis and Buster Skrine. Forgive me if I'm mispronouncing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they trust their corners to cover
they
long
they shouldn't
enough.
Trust Buster Skrine.
Yeah.
They shouldn't.
Well, in general, I mean, but
saying that's a weakness on them that they should be taking advantage of.
But you know, you're right, Paul. It will be interesting because on one hand, you could say that's why the team feels Andy Dalton took a step and is beginning to go into a certain echelon, because that's what the top four or five quarterbacks you can think of. That's what they do.
That's what they
do.
You
bring everybody. They want you to bring everybody. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning.
Yep.
When he was playing, Drew Brees. They want that because they
it opens up the one on ones.
Exactly.
So all you got to do is know how to diagnose it.
So you're right. Will Tyler Boyd be in the right spot?
Will Brandon LaFell
be in the right spot? No.
Will Tyler Croft or CJ Uzomah, depending on what's going on out there.
So that's, you know, it's all sort of related. And I think honestly, Paul, that while it would be exciting, and last year in Oakland was sort of a statement. Man, I could see a lot of heavy. I see a lot of 32 and 25 for the Bengals.
And that's a tall order against one of the best run defenses in football from last year. I want to bring in, I had a conversation with Giovanni Bernard, who often finds himself having to deal with whether it went right or not before the play when backers are charging at him. And he loves it. He absolutely loves it. It was kind of a fun conversation with Gio about being the guy and needing to know, and why he thinks the offense has been so much better picking up the blitz. So here was that conversation with Giovanni Bernard.
Jets obviously blitz their face off. Everybody, I mean, that's kind of been there. When you're a blitz protector, is that just all a mental thing? I mean, obviously when they show up, it's physical at your front door. But I mean, is that a mental thing? Knowing where they're coming from?
Yeah, you got to know where they're coming from. That's plenty of film study and just paying attention in meetings. That's. A lot of that is just, it's easy. The hard part is actually getting it done. But recognizing it, you know, that's just preparation. It's just a matter of how you prepare for the game. And
you kind of love it when the big guy shows up. I feel like you love it when the big guy shows up and you get a chance to butt heads with
him. It's an opportunity to let everybody know that you're not afraid of shit.
Yeah.
Excuse the language, but you're not afraid of anything. So it's just, I don't know, it's just something about picking up a blitz and then having one-on-one coverage on the outside, and Andy throwing the ball to AJ, anybody, it's whoever it is, that one-on-one coverage on the outside is always a good thing.
You've had a few that have made some highlight films. But
Yeah, it's worked out really well. It's usually on those third down plays where they bring in the blitz and we pick it up, right? They see me in there, so they're like, hey, let's blitz Giovanni and see if they can pick this up, and we usually do, and usually go for a touchdown.
What's the when two guys are coming? It's happened, you know.
Yeah, two guys. It's just,
is it just you just got to pick one and just hope Andy gets rid of it? Or yell, look out.
It's a little bit of both. You know, if I'm in the position where I can kind of handle two, you know, I'll block one and bring out another hand. I don't know, rally. It's just a matter of don't let Andy get hit.
Yeah. You guys really over the last few years have progressively gotten way better at burning people in the blitz, too. Yeah. Is that just been a thing of experience for all, with you, Andy, everybody back there, understanding exactly how to deal with every kind of blitz, you think?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a huge thing, is this experience. And you know you've seen these blitzes before. It's just a matter of, you know, getting the proper IDs and a little bit of film study and just preparation. So we've done that over the years, and it's worked out well.
So that's Gio, and let's flip it over to the defensive side of the ball. I mean, that's where the Bengals have to win this game, right?
Yes.
I mean, this Ryan Fitzpatrick is not a top half of the league quarterback, no. And they have Matt Forte now at running back.
They got a lot of old.
They got a lot of old.
A lot of resume, but a lot of old. A
lot of old. Brandon Marshall. So maybe it wasn't good to get the Jets early in the season. You'd rather get them later, yeah, when the old guys are being old and wearing down. Yeah. But Brandon Marshall, like Decker, you know, they've got these pieces in place, but this Bengals defense has been so good when Eifert's out and when they're trying to get used to these new pieces on offense. This defense needs to carry this team.
Yes.
They have to carry this team. And in this week in particular, when they need to take advantage of Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing them a couple of picks or making some bad decisions.
Yeah, they're healthy. Obviously, Vontaze Burfict, but this team has done that before. They're very comfortable with Vinny Ray. And you're right. Geno Atkins needs to be Geno, and you know, obviously those corners have a tall task with Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, and there's respect there for sure. I'm curious. I'm one of those guys who when players hit a certain age in this league, I stop really predicting that they'll do the same things. You have to assume it. Obviously, they're getting paid. They're out there. I want to see if Adam Jones is still fast. I want to see if he's still physical enough to play against Brandon Marshall. Is Carlos Dansby, can he run with Matt Forte? Or are they just two old guys now, so it kind of evens out?
It's an old off.
You know what I mean? This is not meant as a disrespect. I think in this league, it's not baseball. You know what I mean? It's not like crafty guys in basketball in the post. Like, I'm really curious to see, and that was a weakness in coverage, right? Vinny Ray and the linebackers, can they cover tight ends? Can they get out in a flat? Can they cover running backs, right?
Absolutely.
Can Matt Forte's caught like 200 balls.
Yes.
Over the last, you know, 2-3 years ago. So I'm just really, for me, I'm really fascinated in that. You know what I mean? Like, I do think Dre Kirkpatrick and Adam Jones and if Darquez Denard is out there, can handle the receivers one-on-one. You know, I don't think there's any, you know, bad thing there. I think it'll be in those flat areas.
Yep.
Does Dansby still have it? Can Vinny Ray contain sort of those areas?
That's what their offensive coordinator likes to do, and that's what Matt Forte was brought in to do. So that will be really – you're right. That's going to be a huge matchup there. If you've seen our season preview section, which is out, you should pick it up or just go. All those stories are now up at Cincinnati.com. Or if you have the Bengals app, obviously, it's all there. Make sure you pick that up. But we have our season-long predictions in there. Are you sticking with your season? We have to stick with our week one. Not, I mean, we can't change now.
There was nothing that happened as we record this in terms of, you know, major catastrophic injury in New York. So
But quick rundown of who we expect to play. Tyler Eifert will not play.
Right.
Darquez Denard, I think, will probably be listed as questionable.
Yeah.
He's been limited, but I think he'll play.
I think he'll play, but not much.
No, he'll be the nickel corner.
Right.
Jets went four wide more than almost anybody in football last year, so they'll be needing all those corners. So we have him up. Everybody else I expect to go.
Yeah.
Everybody else has been full go in practice this week. All the guys have been, so Obwehi, Fisher, you name
Croft,
it.
Croft. Yeah.
Croft. All those guys that have been banged up and didn't play in preseason, it looks like they're going to go. They've been practicing. So full expectation that they'll be healthy. Predictions, both you and I in our special section had it. We have L's.
Yeah, and I can't change. I think there's two things. One, you're on the road. This team, the Jets, did win 10 games a year ago. I mean, you're not going
to
Oakland.
Most of them in the back half of the season.
Right, you're not going to Oakland. Again, healthy. Now, they've had some issues. I mean, they're going to have guys on the injury report, too.
No Sheldon Richardson.
Yeah.
He's suspended.
Paul, I think this is really a defensive game. And while the Bengals, I think, are going to come out looking good in the final stat sheet defensively, they'll probably get a turnover. Not going to have a ton of yards racked up against them. But I do think they do take a loss in a defensive kind of slugfest, you know, I do think it's going to be a 14-10 loss, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, that close and that low scoring. I mean, give or take a field goal or a touchdown here or there. That's kind of where I'm at.
It's very scary that we both have been so close on all of our picks for the season. I mean, it's very weird. I'm in that exact same area. I have like a 16-14 type of deal where it's going to be a field goal or something like that. And I just think the offense in these early weeks is going to have issues. And when you go against a team that is so good against the run, that's the one thing the Bengals know they can go out and do is line it up and try to run it. But that's not something the Jets are really going to allow. And, you know, you worry about trying to throw too much to A.J. Green going against Darrelle Reeves. I just think in the home game in 9/11, there's a lot stacked. Home openers. I mean, there's a lot stacked up there. So I just think it's going to be a tough one. And I think with the new pieces on offense, it's going to take a few weeks. So I have 16-14 Jets. We'll see. We have been wrong before.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked in either direction, obviously, though. I mean, it's going to be that close.
Yeah.
So I'd be shocked if it was a blowout.
No,
I'd be shocked if the Bengals scored 30.
Yes. Yeah, I don't think this defense is real, unless things go really wrong.
Yeah.
I don't think the Bengals are ever going to be in a position where they're totally dismantled, other than maybe that Brady first home game in New England.
Mm-hmm.
But when I say dismantled, I mean, like, you know, maybe that's just because they lose by 10.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think they're built, if they're healthy, they're that good defensively, I think.
No doubt. I agree with you. All right, well, we're gonna wrap up our portion now and take you out to the back three elements of the podcast. Really excited. Again, from Tuesday's Beyond the Stripes, Paul Dougherty, our esteemed columnist, on the hot seat with Andy Dalton. You'll enjoy that. A lot of good stuff on there, including Andy just telling the true long form story of the luggage incident, which was really funny, and pointing out that Doc did get booed.
Yeah,
he did at one point get booed by one person in the back of Hoff Rouse, which I really enjoyed. Then I'm going to take you to the conversation with Steve Pelazzola from Pro Football Focus as we break down some of the numbers for this week and wrap it up with one of the weirdest interviews I've ever done with Terrell Owens. I did this, full disclosure, did this one late in the summer, right before the season training camp started, when I was trying to put some of these in the tank. And you just never know what you're going to get with T.O. Sometimes he's going to spend 8 minutes answering your first question. So enjoy the conversation with T.O. and enjoy
Stream
the BBP too. Yes. And we will be in New York, so check everything out, Cincinnati.com, this weekend. If you don't have the app, you need it. We're going to be push alerting you all the information as it happens. And then we'll be back for the BBP one. The original, that'll be posted next Tuesday. So we'll talk to you later. All right, welcome back to the Hofbrau House in Newport here on Beyond the Stripes, presented by JosephAuto.com. It is that time for Doc to put our guest on the hot seat. So, Doc, you are up.
Andrew Gregory Dalton.
Yep.
You are on the hot seat. I have to ask you one thing before we really get going. How do suitcases fly out of the back of a pickup truck?
It's a good story, actually. So we are going to Mexico. My wife and I were leaving at like 7 in the morning. And we were staying at my in-law's house. And my father-in-law has a truck. I go and I put the luggage in the back of the truck. I leave the tailgate down thinking that there's going to be more stuff put in the back.
Yeah.
There wasn't. And so we take off, and he has a bed cover on top, so you can't see if the tailgate's down or not. So we get to the airport. No luggage. The tailgate was down. Me being the optimist that I am, we're going to find it. It's going to be on the side of the road. I know it is. I know where it is, actually. It's going to be, we hit a little bump going up the, up to the, where the departures are. It's going to be sitting there. Nope.
Wasn't there.
So after about three circles of the same drive that we made, we figured out that we didn't have luggage. And at that point, we decided, let's put it on social media. Which was the best thing that we could have done. I knew I was going to get ripped for it, but ESPN retweets it. We end up going to the mall later that day. My wife got to have a whole day of shopping, which I'm sure she loved. But we were walking through Nordstrom's, and people would be like, oh, have you found your luggage yet? And I was like, how do you know? They're like, oh, it was on SportsCenter right there. Like, no, but have you found it? You know anybody that knows? So it was about, I put it on there about 8 o'clock. It was about 12 hours later that someone said, I have your luggage. They described it exactly, got in contact with them, and nothing was missing. They had everything. And it was found about a mile from my in-law's house.
That's awesome. I'm very,
so there are good people out there.
Very happy for you.
And it was in the middle of Dallas, too. It wasn't like it was in a small city.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I saw this on Twitter. It was posted in June by a gentleman named Andy Veilhaber. Okay. I was just at the gas station with Andy Dalton at the pump next to me, and he drove away with the pump still in his Land Rover.
I don't know. I don't know about that
one. You have no knowledge of that?
No knowledge of that one.
That's not true.
It could or couldn't be. I don't know.
Okay. Would your wife, Jordan, say that you're a bit of a goofball sometimes?
I'd say sometimes, yeah.
Okay. Could someone make a case for you being absent-minded?
Maybe.
We have a lot in common because I once put my glasses in the freezer. And I don't know why I did that. I've been known to wander the short-term lot at CVG for, like, hours looking for my car. You ever do that? You, like, pretend like you know exactly where it is. Like, I got this. I'm good. But you don't have to because you get the bus. But you know what I mean? Do you ever leave your car in the lot?
I know what you're talking about. Well, I haven't done that, but...
We have a lot in common, then. That and Tim Riggins. Until last year, you'd had leadership defined for you in this town. Everybody wanted to tell you what you needed to do and how you needed to be a leader. How do you define leadership, and when did you feel entirely comfortable leading this team?
I think leadership is, first, you have to show it by the example that you set. Your actions have to... prove that you're doing everything you can to be the best that you can be, especially when it comes to football. And you have to know how to get the best out of the other guys around you. And everybody responds different to that. Not everybody you can talk to the same. You can handle situations the same. Everybody's different. And so I think it's understanding the guys around you and what makes them tick to be the best that they can be. And then what was your other, was there another part of that question, or was that?
No, that's what you did very well.
All right. Okay.
Thank you. Peyton Manning, king of the huddle, kind of undisputed. Brett Favre, Tom Brady. When Boomer Esiason was here, you might not have been born by then, but trust me, Boomer Esiason was once the quarterback here.
Was he?
Yes, he was. Tremendous.
History.
There you go. Chris knows that. Yeah. Tremendous huddle presence. Sort of along the same lines as the previous question, do you have huddle presence? How do you have it, and how would you define that?
Yeah, I think it's understanding your offense, understanding the defense that you're facing, and what play is going to work for certain defenses, and being able to get the offense in and out of plays based on the looks, and knowing when you can get your team into the best play possible. I think that's a big part of what a lot of those guys that you mentioned did and have done, and so. I feel like that's a big part of what I do and what our offense does.
They also, at least Boomer did here, and I know Peyton Manning did obviously, had kind of king of the pack presences in the huddle. This is my team, and you're going to do things the way I want you to do them. Do you feel like you've got that now with these guys?
I definitely do. You know, it's kind of funny. It was OTAs, I think, and one of the rookies, we were talking about something. We were in one of the meetings, and I was like, hey, on this route, you need to do this. And he looked, and he goes, yes, sir. And I was like, exactly right. That's exactly how it should be. But just joking around. But, you know, I definitely feel like I have that presence, and guys are always looking to me to make sure that everything's going to go smoothly.
What is a cardinal football sin, in your opinion?
Never throw across your body late over the middle.
How much of the Bible would you say is literally true?
It's all true.
You think David beat Goliath with a slingshot?
Absolutely.
Okay. What are you going to ask Jesus the first time you meet him?
Ooh, question.
Now, we get heavy on the show sometimes.
First
question. And now I got the microphone working, man, so yeah. I'm in good shape.
You know, I haven't thought about that one. What I hope he says to me is, well done, good and faithful servant.
Very good, very good. See, one of our few guests who actually takes this seriously. I appreciate that. Here's another question. You and I, I know you and I have this in common. Do you have to put a ton of sunscreen on when you go out?
People go by my locker and they don't even have to put sunscreen on. They just walk through the little haze of
sunscreen. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yes.
Yeah, well, one year in Sarasota when I made the mistake of walking into the Reds clubhouse when Ken Griffey Jr. was still there and I was wearing shorts, he gave me the name Chalkline. So you and I are copacetic. I burn in a closet with a 30-watt light bulb.
I know the feeling.
Yeah, so there you go. Do you favor like SP30? Are you a 50 man? How high do you go?
30 is as low as I'll go.
Yeah, yeah.
If 100's available, why not?
I hear you. Have you ever been asked that question before?
Yeah, people just assume, oh, you burn.
Have you ever been asked by a working journalist what sort of sunscreen you use? Just say no.
No, I haven't. Right. First time.
Great question, I think. All right, I want to talk about...
Thanks for putting it out there, though.
You're
sure everybody was interested.
You're welcome. Maybe you get some free sunscreen.
There we go.
I'm here to help. All right, I want to talk about Texas. I lived in Dallas for a while, worked at the Old Times Herald, which no longer exists. I visited Houston on many occasions, Austin, San Antonio, also Lubbock and College Station, which was kind of unfortunate. But anyway, what is the best city in Texas, and do not say Houston, where you're from?
I'm going to go ahead and say Fort Worth, Texas. That's where I went to school.
That's where you went to school. Did you ever go to Billy Bob's, Texas?
I've been to Billy Bob's before.
Is it still there?
It is.
Does anybody know what I'm talking
about?
Does
anybody know what Billy Bob's is?
Yeah, Urban Cowboy, right?
Yeah.
Did you ride the mechanical bull?
I didn't.
Probably not allowed to do that. You might get hurt, thrown off, hurt your shoulder. That would not be good.
Yeah.
Ribs or brisket?
Brisket.
Warren Moon?
Hold on. Does everybody know what brisket is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Let's make sure.
Right.
I've talked to people up here and been like, y'all have brisket? And they're like, what's that?
Yeah. Well, we have smart people in
out.
This audience. We're
okay.
Smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Warren Moon or Troy Aikman?
Troy Aikman.
All right. Do you like Robert Earl Keane?
I do.
For real?
Yeah.
What's your favorite Robert Earl Keane song? Because I'm a big Robert Earl guy.
That's a good question. I'd have to look at a list. Off the top of my head.
How about Sonora's Death Row?
I don't know that one.
You don't know Sonora's Death Row?
I probably heard it, but I don't.
How about The Road Goes On Forever?
There you go.
Can you sing a little bit of that for me?
And The Party Never Ends.
And The Party Never Ends. Would you like to sing a little bit?
I'm okay. Thank you, though.
Do you say...
Would you like to sing?
I would
yeah,
not.
Yeah, go ahead and sing it for me.
I would not. The road goes on forever and the party never ends.
There you go.
You could have done that. Do you say fix...
You just get booed.
Probably. It happens here pretty regularly. Do you say fixin' to... I'm fixin' to go to the mall?
Probably. Yeah, it's definitely...
Yeah, it's a Texas thing.
That's a Texas thing.
In my truck...
Huh?
Yeah, fixing to go to the mall in my truck.
Yeah, there you go.
That's very Texas. What's the best thing somebody can say about you?
I'm a Christian.
What's the worst thing that somebody can say about you?
I don't know. I'm not worried about anybody's opinion.
All right. Are we going too long here?
Do your thing.
All right. I saw you on what is called an Old Spice off-season trading card. You know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about.
You were putting a plate in the dishwasher. That was unbelievable. And I saw you on Twitter using a broom in your driveway. Do you not realize that you're a millionaire famous quarterback and you don't have to broom your own driveway?
Well, it was part of the gig that they were trying to do. They're trying to make us seem like ordinary people.
I see. Do you ordinarily put dishes in the dishwasher?
I do.
That's awesome.
I do the dishes.
Does Jordan have you trained in that respect?
Yeah, I actually did dishes today, so that's part of what I did.
How about that? And you have date night once a week?
We do.
Do you realize how much you're killing the rest of us husbands in America?
Yeah. Well, you should step your game up a little bit.
I can hear it now. Andy Dalton puts dishes in the dishwasher.
Your wife would appreciate it.
I put dishes in the dishwasher, too. What other kind of domestic stuff do you enjoy? I like vacuuming. Do you like vacuuming?
Yeah, it is what it is.
It is what it is.
Yeah. I will if the floor's dirty.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I enjoy it. Do you have any other domestic stuff that you like to do?
I'm trying to think. Do I have anything weird that I do or stuff that I enjoy? No.
Grocery shop?
When she cooks, I usually clean the dishes afterwards.
That's cool. That's what we do.
Yeah.
And then when you cook, do you cook?
I don't cook.
Oh, okay. Well, your son Noah is two, correct?
He is.
Serious question. Will you let him play football?
I will.
Okay. Have you thought about that?
I have. I think when the time is right, he will play.
Okay. And when would that be? Would that be later?
Yeah, when he's old. I didn't start playing until I was in sixth grade, so okay. I wasn't like I was real young.
Okay. Are you afraid of concussions?
No, you can't think about that.
Okay. But, I mean, when you're not playing, when you're actually kind of being pensive and pondering and losing your luggage out of the back of the truck, do you ever think about the possibility of concussion?
You're trying to suggest, no, I didn't have a concussion when that happened.
I wasn't, but that's not a bad thought, brother. last question, I'll let you go. When you arrive at the gates of heaven, notice I said when, not if.
Right.
What will you say to St. Peter to let you in?
What will I say?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's another good question. Things that these are a lot deeper than I thought I was going to get tonight.
Well, we're more than football people up here, brother.
I'm going to say I love Jesus. Jesus died on the cross for my sins and the sins of everybody, and so I'm home.
I think we can end on that.
Yeah.
You're off the hot seat, Andy. Thank you.
Cheers, Andy Dalton.
All right, Paul Inner Jr., and I am here inside the Pro Football Focus studios for the first ever segment of our Bengals in Focus. Maybe it's a working title. We might like that. With the guys from Pro Football Focus, but my guest today, Steve Pelazzola, who is, you've been the lead analyst here. You've been with him since 2011. And people might not know that Pro Football Focus is based in Cincinnati. And here we are down in Over the Rhine. You guys are a member of the Cincinnati business community.
It's our hometown team now, the Bengals. You know, we just posted up here a couple of years ago. We brought guys in from all over the world, literally all over the world, centralized here in Cincinnati, and happy to be here.
Yep, and here you are. Of course, Chris Collinsworth, a big part of this thing. And some weeks we'll have him on, some weeks we'll have you on. But we'll always be taking you inside the numbers because nobody goes deeper inside of the numbers, sometimes concerningly deep inside the numbers. You guys go all the way in on the NFL, and particularly the Bengals. So we're going to be looking ahead to the trends that you need to know about, the deep look at these numbers for the Bengals every single week. So preseason's over. Jets are on the horizon. Let's talk about this Bengals team. We're talking about strengths, maybe where the liabilities are. What do the numbers say about this defense? You know, a defense that set a franchise record for fewest points allowed last year, but there's concerns, right?
Yeah, I have some concerns in the secondary, especially losing Reggie Nelson to free agency. He was such a playmaker on the back end last season. So Sean Williams takes over. You know, can he replace what Nelson was able to do? They play a lot of zone coverage, expect a lot of their back end safeties. And then at cornerback, we've never been particularly high on Dre Kirkpatrick. And again, it's a zone heavy scheme, so he's not out on an island all the time, but a few too many coverage busts, had one of the worst coverage grades in the league last year, misses a few too many tackles, especially for that zone type of team. So definitely want to see another step forward from Kirkpatrick. So I'd say the secondary has some concerns.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's an area where when you not only lose Nelson, but you've got some guys that are a bit unproven behind him. Darquez Dennard behind him. Josh Shaw, who's going to be in the safety and cornerback role. Got to wonder how they're going to eventually hop in as well. Let's go to the offensive side of the ball. And much has been made about the loss of Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu. How are the Bengals going to fill that really is the biggest question, and how will that affect Andy Dalton? What do the analytics say about how the Bengals will react to losing those guys?
I think it's a massive loss, and then you throw an early season Tyler Eifert injury. But if you look at Dalton's season last year, by far his best season, both from a statistics point of view, but also from our just throw for throw grading. But the biggest thing for him last year was having A.J. Green on the outside, Marvin Jones, both guys who can go up, win contested catches, don't even have to be open, you know, to get them the ball, and then Eifert stretch in the middle of the field. I just think Dalton was really elevated by having those three legit playmakers. Sanu did some nice things from the slot. So a lot of pressure on Tyler Boyd. I know he, you know, by all reports, had a good camp, and we were just talking earlier. I'm mixed on him. Every time during the draft process, there was a few great plays, a few times he disappeared, but he's a pretty good route runner, and I think he's going to help, but I do think that the Jones loss in particular is going to be a big one.
We've talked a lot with, you know, with you guys when we look at some of your numbers, is snap to throw on Andy Dalton and how quickly he's able to get the ball out. How much is that a part of his game, and how much does losing weapons maybe affect how much that can be a part of his game?
It's a great point. It is his game. I mean, it's know where you're going before the snap and get rid of it. He's always among the top two or three in the league, getting rid of the ball. And that protects the offensive line. There's a reason why he's not pressured nearly as often as other quarterbacks. Now, when you have good receivers that get open quickly, then you can do that. And, you know, Tom Brady last year, he's the quickest in the league too. But when he lost Julian Edelman, he went from 2.2 seconds to 2.6 seconds. So if you don't have that guy that's getting open quickly and that you can trust, sometimes you hold the ball a little bit longer. But every single year, Dalton's really good at getting the ball out of his hands.
We all know so much of this offense, particularly early in the season, is going to be about developing trust with all those new pieces. Let's talk about the Jets real quick. And it's very much along the same lines. What do the Jets do? I mean, they're as blitz-heavy as anybody in the league, right?
Oh, man, they get after it. Head coach Todd Bowles has created an aggressive atmosphere. Now, they were coming from Rex Ryan, who, you know, likes to do his whole blitz thing too, but I talked to some of their players last year. Week four, they went zero blitz, meaning send everybody, no safety help. They did it 21 straight times against the Dolphins. And I talked to some of their players. They said, we loved it. You know, this guy's just coming in, and he said, I'm going after it. So he's created this mentality with the Jets. So the blitz is a huge part of their game. They come from all angles. But if Dalton continues the way he did last year to really improve, be able to see it come and get the ball out of his hands, you know, I think the Bengals will be ready for it. But it's definitely something that Dalton has improved through the years, is his ability to diagnose the blitz and find the open man.
Yeah, earlier in his career, that used to be the knock. The knock was you just blitz him and he'll throw it to you. And then we've seen the last couple of years, they've blitzed him and he's done a good job of burning him, whether it's over the top to A.J. Green or any number of the other weapons. But we'll see. Good first session. Here we go. Yep. First week is finally upon us. I'm happy we're not talking about preseason football anymore.
Well, it's time.
But it's going to be a whole lot of fun every single week here. We're going to be in here down over the Rhine in the Pro Football Focus studios, diving deep into the Bengals numbers, letting you know what's really going on and what to look forward to on Sunday. We'll see you next week.
All right. Join us now, Terrell Owens. You know him. You've known him for a long time. 15,934 career receiving yards. That's second in NFL history. 153 receiving touchdowns. That's third in NFL history. Played for the Bengals in 2010. A year we had 72 receptions, 983 yards, and 9 touchdowns. Just to jump right in with you here. First of all, thanks for joining. I want to start with your friendship with Chad. You know, do you remember when you first started to talk with him about playing together and how that all sort of came about?
Well, it wasn't even with Chad. It was Carson Palmer. Carson, I think he lives somewhere out here in the Los Angeles area, or he trains out here in the area. And so it was he and Matt Leinart and a number of guys that trained out, I think, around in the Redondo Beach area. And so Matt Leinart had a charity event, I think, sometime around in July or whatever. And so at that point, I was still, you know, working out, training, you know, getting myself ready to play. I didn't have a team at the time. And so attended Matt Leinart's charity event, and Matt was like, man, you know, come out and, you know, throw with us. It's a bunch of guys, you know, from USC, some college guys like, you know, Carson, some a couple other quarterbacks are out there. It's like, you know, come train with us. So I went out there and worked out, and so that's where I met a bunch of the guys, and obviously Carson was there, and so we worked out a couple of times, and, you know, Carson saw that I was in shape, and, you know, first, you know, couple of sessions, you know, he asked me kind of what was I doing and, you know, what was I up to, and I was like, no, nothing much, just, you know, just training, just trying to, you know, keep myself in shape. And so he realized that I was out there running around with all the young guys, and, you know, I was just in greater shape, just as great shape as those guys were. And he saw, you know, that really, you know, at my age, there was really no difference. And he, I think he assessed, you know, kind of where they were and who they had at their position, receiver position. And, you know, I knew at that time, I think they were shorter receiver, or they were trying, or they were looking to sign, what was the receiver? Brown, is it Antonio?
Antonio Bryant was hurt, yeah.
Yeah, right, Antonio Bryant, yeah. And so he never really said anything to me, but I think he went back to the staff and had mentioned that he had worked out with me, and he was, you know, he was like, man, you know, this guy's, you know, is in shape, blah, 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 blah. You know, maybe we need to look at, you know, him coming in, being that Antonio Bryant was hurt or what have you. And kind of one thing kind of led to another. And so I told Carson, I'm like, you know, if there's an opportunity, like, yeah, I would love to come in and play. And obviously I knew Chad played over there, and I just didn't really know how realistic, you know, that would be, considering, you know, at this time, you know, I think everybody's perception of who I was and the things that has happened throughout my career. But, you know, I looked at that as an opportunity, you know, to play with a perennial, you know, type of receiver, me and Chad on one side, you know, Chad on one side, me on the other. I'm like, that could be a lot of headache, you know, for a lot of defenses. And I'm sure a lot of people thought it'd probably be a lot of headache for the coaches. But my relationship with Chad, you know, we've always been friends. I didn't see that I would come in and see it as a any type of distraction or disruption to what they had going on. Just based on the fact that, you know, I'm not a person that is intimidated by anything or anybody. So I just looked at it as an opportunity to get back on the field and do what I do best. And so, Carson, you know, somehow made it happen. There was a situation where going into training camp, I think, you know, I didn't get signed till right before training camp or something like that.
Yep.
And, you know, I went in and did what I had to do with just a little less than a month prior to the season. So I had a lot of picking up of the system and a lot of the nuances of the offense and everything. I had a lot to do in a short amount of time. And, you know, I think once I look back on that year, I think I did pretty well, considering just the short amount of time that I had to come in there and pick up everything and get acclimated, especially with the offense and especially with Carson. So I think he had to kind of get acclimated too with me in terms of, you know, my speed. I think once he saw me work out the first couple of times, he realized that, you know, my speed was sort of deceptive. He tried to overthrow me a couple of times, but he couldn't because of my speed was very, very deceptive. So I think he saw that as an addition, along with what I had done with my body of work over the years that he's seen me play and heard of me. He thought it could be something special.
Yeah. How did the T. Ocho show come about? That became a big part of that year. You guys, I mean, it was a fun thing. People were anticipating every week. How did that come about and play out for you guys?
I don't remember how it came about. I think Chad and I, we had, obviously we shared the same agent, and the marketing guy for the both of us, Robert Bailey, I think he reached out to some people and put some feelers out to see if that could happen. And I think Chad asked me if I would be up to it, and I'm like, all right, cool, sure. You know, I think Chad and our friendship, it was instant. We're like brothers, you know what I mean? So You think about the different, you know, the similar personalities, but I think we're different in a lot of ways too. It only made sense, you know, for us to, you know, do something together. So I think it was something that a lot of people had a lot of interest in seeing, you know, us two with great personalities together, not only on the field, but just with us being very outspoken and you know, you never know what to expect from either of us at any given time. It can make for a great show, and, you know, whether that's good or bad, but I think for the most part, it was positive. You know, I think Chad and I, we have confidence in ourselves that we didn't feel like, you know, there was going to be any type of, you know, negative thing, you know, coming from us. You know, I think we're as the, probably the public, you know, anticipated. But, you know, it was a fun show. I think it got some great ratings. You know, I think that was around the time, I think, the network Versus was around the time they had established. And, yeah, it was a good show. It was a good time.
Yeah. How did you, you know, you go through that year, and Cincinnati was probably a different place than some of the more, you know, the larger markets that you played at. And Marvin Lewis, the head there. How did you get along with Marvin Lewis and find Cincinnati as a culture in the locker room compared to maybe some of the other places that you've been at previously in your career?
Well, the thing is, I mean, I had played in Buffalo, fired. So, you know, in terms of playing in different markets or smaller markets or anything like that, I mean, after playing in Buffalo, I think you can play anywhere, to be honest. I don't think Buffalo was high on a number of free agents list, you know, as far as going there and playing. But, you know, for me, I was always confident in my ability, no matter where or what uniform that I played in. So I think that was what was so unique about me is that no matter what the situation or whomever, whatever anybody thought about me as a person, whether they knew that to be true or not in terms of my character, I didn't allow that to deter, you know, what I did or distract me from what I did on the football field. My skill set, you know, I can play, you know, no matter what, you know, uniforms were made out of plastic bags, you know, I could play in it. So in terms of, you know, the different markets and things like that, I didn't really get wrapped up into that too much because it wasn't really about the market. It was all about playing. It was all about X's and O's for me and what I could go in and do and help that particular team do.
Did you ever butt heads with Marvin Lewis, or was that a pretty good relationship?
No, we never had any run-ins, you know, and I'm pretty sure he probably may have anticipated that, you know, considering, you know, the perception that precedes me, you know, probably prior to what he's heard, you know, from other situations on other teams. But at that time in my career, man, you know, I didn't really want to ruffle any feathers. I wanted to go in there and try to fit in and try to be productive on the football field. I didn't really have any questions about me as a person or my character or any of the things that, you know, people had said about me in terms of my involvement with my teammates and things in the locker room. Again, a lot of that stuff was a little far-fetched, so it was unfortunate, you know, how a lot of those things got out there and played out. But for me, you know, I was the same person in that locker room that I was, you know, on all the other teams. You know, I went out there, I practiced hard, I played hard, and again, you know, I was just a household name, I was a personality. Some people liked me, some people didn't because of my passion. My passion often got misconstrued for being arrogant and cocky, but for me, I'm not that type of person, and however it played out, it did. But other than that, you know, I got along great with a lot of my teammates. I had teammates that came, you know, to me and pulled me to the side and in private moments, like, man, it's like, you're a great guy, you're a good teammate. It's like, man, I don't know what all this stuff I've heard about you is about, blah, blah, blah. And so, again, it only takes maybe one or two people or, you know, in the media, you know, throughout my career to ask certain people about me. And, again, everybody's not going to be 100% liked. And so, you know, there are things thrown out there in those seeds planted to where, you know, people said, oh, you know, I was this and I was that. So other than that, I didn't really worry about it too much. I can't change who I am, and I never did. So I think if you ask those guys, I'm sure in the locker room, they'll tell you. And I think if you go to every team that I've played with and you ask, you know, a number of guys, they'll tell you too. So other than that, man, I just went in there and just wanted to try to make a good showing. My concentration and focus really was more just, you know, going in there and really trying to get acclimated, you know, to my teammates, the offense and things that I was supposed to do because, again, it was a little bit of a different system than I was used to based on the number system. But, you know, again, with some of the work that I had done with Carson, you know, during the summertime and then really getting into training camp and really staying after, you know, some staying after meetings or what have you and talking with the receiver coach and getting with him to try to get this offense down, that's what, you know, enabled me to be as productive as I did during that year because I didn't foresee that being just a one-year deal, even though that's what it said on paper. You know, for me, it was sort of like, you know, me auditioning, you know, for another year or so after that, you know, but clearly that didn't happen.
Yeah, did you ever, I mean, you mentioned earlier your relationship with Carson was good from the very beginning. Did you get a sense during that year of frustration growing in him that he would end up doing what he did where he, you know, demanded a trade or he would retire? Did you get a sense of that or did that kind of even take you by surprise when that news broke in January?
No, I didn't really get a sense of that, you know, during the course of the year. I think it was frustrating, you know, as the year progressed considering the talent that we had, you know, especially on offense, you know. I can't really speak much about the defense. I mean, the defense, you know, they did their thing. But, you know, sometimes when you have, you know, some great offensive weapons, you know, we had a guy at quarterback with Carson, myself, and we had Gresham, the tight end. You know, you had Bernard and Pierce and those guys at running back. I mean, we had some, you know, we had the makeup on offense to be something dangerous and special. But for whatever reason, you know, we just couldn't click on all cylinders. At, you know, on Sundays at times, and I think, you know, for us it was just kind of disappointing, considering, you know, what we had on the football field, those, you know, the talent, and then we just couldn't get any better. We couldn't. I don't know. I think we finished with 8-8 that year.
Four and 12.
See, I'm thinking better than yeah. We actually were. So again, just to think about what we could have done. I mean, and that's the thing with football. I mean, when you have, when you look at now, you have these preseason favorites in the NFC East and AFC East South and East North and stuff like that. You know, to be good on paper is one thing, but to actually put it on the field, to be a great product on the field is another thing. So there's no such thing as paper champs, and you got to go out there and you got to prove it, you know, every Sunday.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the probably the frustration lied is that, you know, we had, you know, there are some things that we probably could have done better. Again, I didn't sense anything. You know, that I saw, but it was just unfortunate because, you know, again, you don't get any two better receivers than myself and than Chad, and you know, we had a running game. I mean, we just couldn't get it going.
Yeah, you know, we're kind of getting towards the end here. I mean, when you end up going to injury reserve in December, ironically for the first time ever in your career. Did you think at that point that it could be the final game of your career, or were you just kind of at that point under the assumption of all right, we'll get back and go back at it next year?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that, you know, that was the thing. I mean, again, you look, I think if you've heard, you know, LeBron say it, you know, with the different teams that he's been on when he went from Cleveland to Miami, speaking of basketball, and then he goes from Miami back to Cleveland, and everybody's looking forward to this instant success. And I saw you heard the analogy just the other night that LeBron said, is that, you know, people expect, you know, it to be like oatmeal, instant oatmeal. And when you have a lot of talent, you know, a lot of talent, and you put them in on the same team, and everybody expects greatness right away, but it doesn't work that way. You know what I mean? It takes a little time to gel. And so that's, you know, so yeah, that's how I saw it. I mean, again, had we been able to come back and you know, reassemble that same team along with some new pieces, you know, I think, yeah, that would have been the recipe for definitely a better season the following year. But for whatever reason, like I said, I'm not management. I don't know what they were thinking beyond that. But for me personally, I think I came in there and I exceeded, you know, everyone's expectations, considering at that point in time, even, you know, going into the negotiation process, signing a one-year deal or what have you, a two-year deal, I don't know what, I can't remember what it was, but, you know, I looked at it as an opportunity to come in, at least, you know, play a couple of years and stay in Cincinnati and really gel with Chad and looking forward to the off season with Carson, you know, to really, you know, be on the same page and have a better season. So again, a lot of things kind of unfolded after that year that I think a lot of people didn't see happening.
Yeah. Well, real quick, you know, you've got an athleisure line now, Prototype 81. What you got going on with that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, all our athletes, you know, try to involve, indulge themselves in some type of business endeavor, you know, whether they're playing, you know, during the years or after or whatever. But, you know, this is what's been so, like, my passion probably like the last, you know, couple of years or so, and I've been working on it diligently. You know, it's an athlete, sort of like it's a fashion-forward sports luxury line. So it's going to be men's and women's. So if you think athleisure, what I'm trying to do with my line is what Lululemon has done for women with their line, with the yoga pants and a lot of the materials and fabrics, what have you. So what I'm trying to do with my line, Prototype 81, is really kind of mirror what they've done with their women's line, but I want to do it for men. If you look at Lululemon, if you know anything about Lululemon, they only have a small section, you know, for men. But your average male is not going to be walking into Lululemon to shop because it's been marketed as a women's brand. And so for me, that's what I've created. We're going to be launching here mid-June. We have a couple of trade shows that we're already geared up for, that are going to be in New York and in Vegas, in July and August. The difference between my line and anything else out there, again, it's solely kind of created and designed by an athlete, but it's just not for an athlete. You know, we're going to present some items out there that's going to give people that fashion sense and still have that athletic aesthetic to it. So it's going to be men and women, as I mentioned. And so we got some nice stuff brewing and just, you know, definitely be on the lookout for it. So I think anybody that knows me, they know I'm creative. I think the team that I have around me, they've realized how creative I was and really how involved I am with the process. So for me, I'm learning a lot about the fashion industry. So I know a lot of people are probably going to be anticipating and you know, what I've been doing and what's going to hit the market. But when we hit the market, it's going to be some different stuff. But at the same time, it's going to be very fashion-forward. It's going to be fashionable. It's going to look good, and I think everybody's going to like it.
That's fantastic. That sounds great, Carol. I really appreciate it. Good luck with all that, of course, and definitely appreciate you joining us here on the podcast, and hope all goes well for you, man.
appreciate it, man.